I think roller derby is a hopeful thing.
He earned enough money from selling plants that he paid off the mortgage on his house.
People always want to know, is that a lie or is that the truth?
I completely disassembled this Triumph TR6.
I wish I could have been a professional woman soccer player.
I'm Martha Woodruff, and this is The Spark, an exploration of interesting people doing interesting things. This is part one of the first ever two-part conversation on The Spark. Writer Jack Greer, who has advanced degrees in English literature, claims that all his life he's felt grounded in water. So I asked him, what's so grounding about water?
There's a couple of things. One is when I was really young and on my own and before I could drive a car, I was put in a sailboat. I was about 12, I guess, at the time. And off I went. And I realized I could go places without a motor, without a driver's license, without a parent, And the only thing driving me was the wind. And I love that idea.
Where were you sailing?
That was off the Rappahannock River in a place called Camp Rappahannock.
So were you at summer camp?
I was at summer camp.
Okay.
Yeah, I was at summer camp, yes. And whenever I had a free period, I would jump in the sailboat. So it was sort of that sense of freedom to go wherever you want. But the other thing is the water itself. For some reason, ever since I can remember, we went down to the Chesapeake Bay in the summertime to my grandmother's house. And I just bonded, with that body of water. It really grounds me, if that's not an oxymoron, to be grounded in water. But that combination of wind and sun and water, just puts me...
You feel most yourself?
Yeah, I feel myself. It puts me in a good place. And so, when I was in graduate school, fast forward, when I really had a tough time trying to decide who I wanted to be, I really wanted to get back to the water. And I think I needed to get back to the water to find myself again. And that's what happened. And I ended up making a whole career out of writing about the Chesapeake Bay.
Now, let's talk about your career.
Okay.
Talk.
Well, I was very lucky. I'll say that to begin with. I really wanted to write. That was a key thing that had taken over. But I wanted to write about direct experience. And the longer I lived, the more that's what I wanted to write about. And so I dropped out of graduate school, and my wife and I and our young son moved down by the Chesapeake Bay, this little cabin where we stayed for 8 years, as it turned out.
Whereabouts on the bay?
That was on right off the Rogue River, which is just south of Annapolis.
Okay.
I went to work at a boatyard and learned how to build boats, and that's what I did for my direct experience. I had saws and drills and hammers in my hand every day.
And we're building what kind of boats?
I tell you what, I wanted to build was sailboats. And Bobby and I, my wife, had traveled to Camden, Maine and seen some amazing wood boats there being built and amazing craftsmanship. And that's really what I wanted to do. But I had to go with who was hiring at the time. And I had very little experience. I'd worked as a carpenter's helper one summer, which wasn't glorious. And then I also...
Mainly toting stuff?
mainly, yes. And holding studs, and things like that. And then a friend of mine and I built a little sailboat when we were in college, which was really great. It was a little Blue Jay. It's a 13.5-foot boat out of wood.
And it floated.
And it floated. And
it
we sailed it. Yep. We sailed it up and down the rivers and so forth. But that was pretty limited experience, especially when you go into a production mode. So I really was going into a boatyard that was very serious about making money. They had people to pay and materials to buy. So I really found myself in a production boatyard working very hard. I was working at the boatyard and I got a call from the English department at University of Maryland. They needed someone to teach some classes and asked if I might come back and do that. So I did. At that time, I was working part-time at the boatyard and part-time at the University of Maryland teaching. And people kidded me about changing in a phone booth, going from boat builder to Professor Greer,
Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Superman.
But I went back and sort of rejoined the academic side of my life. But I still had ambivalent thoughts about teaching full-time. I liked teaching. And I'd done a fair amount of it by this time, after college and then through graduate school. But a friend of mine told me that there was this opening for a writer who wanted to write about the Chesapeake Bay at the University of Maryland. And I thought, well, that's really weird because I am writing about the Chesapeake Bay. And by that time, I published a few articles, you know, about the Bay, and I was continuing to write both fiction and nonfiction about the Bay. So I interviewed and got the job. And this was a program that was, at that time was just starting. It was called the Sea Grant Program. And it's a partnership with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, where they partner with universities around the country along the coastal areas, including the Great Lakes, to focus on marine science and marine studies, including outreach and education. So they really wanted not only biologists, chemists, physicists, you know, but they wanted writers. Mm-hmm. We had a filmmaker that worked with us. He did many, many documentaries and other people who were very good at communicating. And then the longer I stayed there, the more I got involved in the policies themselves, because there were many, many very heated debates about what to do, how to do it, how to pay for it, whose responsibility it is, fishing disputes. And so I started to get called on to do facilitating. And one advantage that I had, it was really a kind of a blessing, a small blessing, is that I got to spend a lot of time with the scientists because I basically lived there. So unlike a reporter who would come in and interview a scientist and then go away, I was on the campus, and so I would go see them all the time. And I would talk to them again and again and again, and I would read the journal articles that they published, and I would just immerse myself. And I got very, very close to some of these issues, and I would write these synthesis articles about what several different scientists thought about something and where it was all heading. So, again, they started asking me to facilitate these meetings that they would have, sometimes between Maryland and Virginia, with the blue crab issue in particular. Some of those were very heated.
Yes.
We had watermen there in the room.
Yes.
We had politicians, you know, legislators, natural resource people, conservationists, Chesapeake Bay Foundation, others, each with their own voice and own very strong opinion. And we had to try to figure a way forward.
Did this seem like a job or a calling?
You know, in a way, it was a calling, and I say that because early on, for some reason that I will not be able to explain to you, I think, I really decided that I didn't just want a job, you know, because you only live once, right? And just going out and getting a paycheck just didn't cut it for me at all, you know? So it was really more, what did I want to do with this life I had, you know? And I decided that I wanted to focus on the environment and the Chesapeake Bay in particular.
Have you saved the bay?
Oh, gosh, that's, you know, that's a tough assignment, and we are trying to save it, if that's the right word. I'm not sure, you know, you save a person with the bay. I'm not sure that you really save it or you do something else, but we're trying to restore it in many cases because we have degraded it. And there are bright spots, you know, there are these wonderful bright spots where all of a sudden underwater grasses, which have just disappeared, will reappear, like on the Susquehanna Flats up in the northern part of the bay. And it's a wonderful thing, you know, and partly because of our efforts to reduce nutrients from farm fields and development and suburban areas and waste treatment, all those things that pour nutrients into the bay, it actually has an effect. Then, however, if we get some really bad weather, a lot of runoff, then the grasses might go down again, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a unilinear, you know, sort of a nonlinear problem. You make advances and then you fall back, but you hope to keep pushing in the right direction. And I noticed on CNN the other night, they did a program on a friend of mine, Mutt Merritt, who runs an oyster hatchery in for the University of Maryland and the Oyster Recovery Partnership in the Chesapeake Bay. And they are now producing, not millions, which they used to do, but now billions of teeny oysters to plant on the reefs of the bay. And so, yeah, no, exactly. So it's just good news all the way around, you know.
A picture of Jack Greer and some Save the Bay links are on the Spark page at WMRA.org.
Sailing down the Chesapeake, all aboard the Chesapeake, sailing down Chesapeake Bay.
Next week, part two of our conversation. It'll be about the 4 years Jack Greer spent sailing the Caribbean with his wife, Bobby.